Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Only thing unplugged is Forgotten Seasons.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Forgotten Seasons. This is your host, Dylan Dreyfus. Today, we got a New York City legend, a man that goes by the name Skip to My Lou, Rafer Alston, talking 2003-04 Heat. This was D-Wade's rookie year in Miami. Rafer and D-Wade were surrounded by Lamar Odom, Caron Butler, Udonis Haslem, and coached by Stan Van Gundy. The squad won 42 games, finished as the number 4 seed in the East, and lost to a 61-win Pacers squad in round 2. Quick rerun to the Heat leading up to the 03-04 season. Obviously, they have the storied Hardaway Morning era in the late 90s and into the early 2000s. They made the playoffs 6 straight years and were one of the most steady teams in the East. Then in 2002-03, they're really bad. They win just 25 games and land the number 5 pick in the draft. And who falls into their lap? The kid from Marquette, Dwayne Wade. Rafer signed a 1-year deal in Miami in the fall of 2003. Lamar Odom signs a 6-year mega deal coming over from the Clippers before this season. And that's how the squad comes together. After this season, obviously the Heat make that blockbuster trade for Shaq. They send Caron Butler and Lamar Odom over. So we really only got one season with this group together. And they were fun. They showed flashes, make round 2, but that's it. So let's get into the episode now. Forgotten Seasons with Rafer Alston on the 2003-04 Heat begins right now. Rafer, thank you for coming on. How's it going today?
Thank you for having me. Everything, I'm doing well. I'm doing great.
So we're going to be hitting on the 2003-04 Heat season, a year which you have talked about as being invaluable to your career. But before we get into that, real quick, let's hit on this upcoming New York City Point Gods documentary coming out July 29th on Showtime. You're obviously one of the most infamous and legendary ballers from New York City. Can you give us a little bit of a taste on viewers what to expect from this documentary?
I think what you expect from the New York City Point Guard documentary is a insight of what goes on since a young man in New York City playing basketball, trying to find his way, and coming up in the ranks behind so many legendary point guards. You also get a chance to see different eras of great New York City point guards and how during each era, so many of us were, you know, honing our skills, but yet playing against each other and honing and competing to try to be considered, if not the best, or one of the best point guards in the New York City area. You also get a feel of the culture behind it, the atmosphere, how electrifying it is for the fans, the people who live in New York City, and how they gravitate to the New York City game.
Mm. Well, I mean, there's nothing like watching a New York City point guard. They got the certain flair, the certain swag, and you're Absolutely. A perfect representation Absolutely. Of that. So for everybody out there, again, July 29th, New York City point guards. Rafer just listed a bunch of the guys that are going to be in it, but it's hard to tell the history of basketball without focusing on the New York City point guard. So it's an amazing project and definitely be sure to check that out. Segueing now, 2004 Heat, kind of setting the table here a little bit. This is your 5th year in the league. You signed a 1-year deal with Miami right before the season. You've said, you know, recently in past interviews that this season really taught you a lot. It was your first year playing big, consistent minutes. You weren't starting for the whole year, but you were playing starter minutes. What is it about this season, your lone year in Miami, that that really propelled you and allowed you to play 11 years in the league?
Well, one, my first time being in the rotation, being a lead guard, playing with such phenomenal talent across the board. You got a chance to realize how long an NBA season is from a playing standpoint, from a consistent player standpoint, and how there was so many different ups and down peaks and valleys in the season. We started the season 5-15, and everyone wrote us off. They said we're going to end up being the worst team ever in the league. And then all of a sudden, we just went on this run to where we were top four team in the East. We had Dwayne Wade was a rookie. We signed Lamar Odom. We had two proven vets in Eddie Jones and Brian Grant. But after that, the rest of us was on one-year deals and just a bunch of guys trying to hope to stick in the league. And we had Caron Butler as well.
Yep.
But the rest of us was pretty on like one-year deals trying to find our way. And we also had a first-year head coach. Even though our coach has been in the league as a coach for a long time and been in basketball for a long time, his first year being a head coach in the NBA in Stan Van Gundy. So, it was huge. It was a special time. It was special for all of us. And we were able to grow up and grow together.
Mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of guys, and you're always one of the first people that they talk about as players need to adapt to the NBA game because, one of the biggest bags ever, but when you go to the NBA, certain coaches kind of limit you. Can you talk a little bit about just how much situation matters in the NBA? You mentioned you were on 1 year deals. This is your first time playing big minutes, maybe having confidence to, not feel like you're going to get pulled if you make a mistake. How much does opportunity and situation matter in the NBA?
The opportunity situation is huge. It matters a lot. For me, I come with the playground stigma. Mm-hmm. So therefore a lot of coaches, especially like throwback coaches who probably, have this taste in their mouth about the inner city game and players. So they make it seem as if a person like myself has to make this huge adjustment. What little did they know is that I was a big student of the game. I was always around the game, playing the game, understanding what it was, I played point guard from the time I was born. So when I finally got the chance to play significant minutes, the coaches realized that there wasn't an adjustment for me out there.
Yep.
It was just give them a chance to play minutes, go through some ups and downs in the pro game, which every person and player does. And they realized that I could run your team. I was a low turnover guy. The biggest knock was, which is a knock for a lot of players that come to this league from a point guard standpoint, is can he shoot the jump shot, the outside shot? Can he shoot it from range? In which I end up developing, a 3-point shot. But everything else, they didn't have to show me. And I think they realized that once they gave me the opportunity to play significant minutes, and gave me the chance to be the point guard of their team and run their team. I always knew time, score, and situation. There's so much that they realized I knew and that I was so engaged in the game from a offense and defensive standpoint that I think it kind of blew their mind about me because they had this thought and perception in their head about me.
I mean, yeah, this is your first season playing starter minutes. And after this, you're a starter for the rest of your career. I want to hit on Dwayne Wade a little bit. It's hard to talk about a Miami Heat season when he's there without talking about D Wade. First season in the league, he's a rookie, but he's a 22-year-old rookie. So, he's mature. He's not frail. You remember your first interaction, your first memories with D Wade when you get into camp or preseason? What was that like, and what was going through your mind?
Well, my first interaction with Dwayne Wade was when I was in Milwaukee when he was at Marquette, and okay. I got a chance to go to some Marquette games, and I actually had a chance to go in the gym I think once, maybe twice, play some pickup with them, and I knew how what I mean, I knew how good he was. I didn't know he was going to be this good when he got to the NBA. We got in training camp. He was a young guy, and you know, everything looked new to him. The first part of the season, he kept hitting the floor, coming up with these knick-knack injuries. And we, you know, a lot of us was concerned if he would last the whole season because he always had to be hitting the floor. But he ended up developing that year, our go-to guy. And I think that season, a lot of us knew that he was going to be a special player. He just worked so hard in his game. He was such a fierce competitor. You couldn't tell him that he wasn't the best player on the court, or if not one of them. And thus he's, you know, soon to be a Hall of Famer.
People today talk about him, you know, top three, top four shooting guards ever. But I think people forget that his rookie year, he was playing point most of the year, right?
Yeah, he played a lot of point. I came up the bench behind him. The good thing is we played a lot together, which allowed him to see the game from a point guard standpoint as well as a shooting guard standpoint. So I think Miami Heat, Stan and Pat Riley, they did such a phenomenal job with playing him at the point and then allow him to move over at times to the shooting guard when I subbed in. You know, I think I played I might have averaged 30 minutes a game that year.
Yep.
And so that means I played a lot with him. So he got a chance to just have the ball, play off the ball, you know. So, you know, I think for me, it was shocking to see them put him at the point that year.
Are you working with him at all? Like, is he coming to you for advice?
No, actually, we had a veteran that helped both of us, you know, understand, you know, and Bimbo Coles.
Okay.
So Bimbo Coles always in our ear, his ear, my ear. Remember, at that time, I was learning what it is to play 30 minutes a game and be a star that time. I started quite a few games too that year. You know, a lot of games he missed, I started.
Going on to the coach, I think it's funny looking at your career, pretty much half your career you played under a Van Gundy. This year starts with Stan, and then you go on to play in Houston with Jeff, and then you go back to Orlando with Stan again. I've talked to Matt Barnes, JJ Redick, who played under Stan as well. They talk about kind of just his, like, knowledge for the game and X's and O's ability. I think Matt said you always felt like Stan was going to find a way to get you guys a win. What was your experience year one playing under Stan? I know he's old school. I know he's hard nosed, but what was playing under Stan like?
It was great. It was great. Never a day he allowed you to come in and not get better. From an individual standpoint and from a team standpoint. He was big on staying with your routine. Whatever is working, that's what we're going to stay with. He also taught us, you know, how not to mess with the game, don't cheat the game. But he was a guy that was, I don't call it nitpicking, but he was always on you.
Yeah.
About doing the right thing, making the right plays, you know, holding yourself and each other accountable. But he allowed you to go out there and play. That's what, like, as long as you were doing your game and within the grand scheme of the team's, the framework of the team, you know, he allows you to get into your game. He had, no matter, one thing about Stan, he has belief in the roster. So whether outsiders say that whatever they say about the roster was a strong team or a team that was probably borderline making the playoffs or getting the first round, Stan had unbelievable belief in the roster. And he knew, he figured out how to utilize the guys that whatever players were on that team, he found a way to utilize and get the best out of them. So I had a chance to play with him twice, and both times we had a phenomenal run. Mm-hmm. And that was a great run for him and I. It was touching, to say the least, because both times we were in situations that probably were uncomfortable. Because when I remember I got traded from Houston to Orlando, and it was uncomfortable for me at the time because everyone wanted me to be like Jameer. You know, and that year Jameer Nelson had an all-star year. Mm-hmm. But I know Stan knew that I it's a different point guard coming in at this time, but he knew I can help and lead them, you know, to where we were trying to get to.
Not for sure. Stan always won games. I mean, wherever he was, pretty much. Was Pat Riley in the picture at all this year? Because he resigns as head coach, then he's back a few years later as head coach.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he's still a president and a GM, whatever you call it. Definitely. Remember that everything still runs and goes through Pat.
Godfather.
Pat's phenomenal. You know, he knew one thing about Pat. He knows the NBA. He knows the play. He knows what it takes to be a winner, a champion. He knows what goes into being a good person and a good teammate. You know, mm-hmm. You know the sacrifices you have to make. How tough it is when your career is going up and on the way down. He's wonderful in that aspect.
Any specific Pat Riley stories you got? People call him the
Don. I don't really have any. You know, because at the time, like I said, he was, you know, at the time he was in training. He was our coach in training camp, and then out of nowhere he stepped aside. Mm-hmm. So you know, we just have. I just played with Stan, but Pat was. We always called him coach when he ran around, so he was always around. And you know, we saw a lot of him, especially when we made that run when we turned the season around.
When you guys start winning, that's when he comes out.
No, man, he's always around. But then we realized, you know, like I said, it was a situation where we turned the season around and Pat understood, okay, now you have to sustain and you have to not only finish the regular season, you have to do it in the playoffs. And he understood what it takes to, you know, win a playoff series. And so obviously you'll see him around a lot more because, you know, he can give us the insight.
Yep.
You know, you could have a conversation about the approach if you're down 0-2, in a series. So he was great with us.
Another New York guy that I wanted to hit on, one of my personal favorites, Lamar Odom, who's on your team. To me, you look at his career, I think he chose winning, you know, over personal accolades. Maybe he chose to go to L.A., take a back seat. How good was Lamar Odom? I know he's a New York guy. I'm not sure how early you were put on to Lamar Odom, but can you just, you know, tell the listeners a little bit about just how skilled Lamar Odom was?
Lamar was good. I had a luxury. We're from the same neighborhood. That was the thrill about this. Is we're from the same neighborhood. I'm some years older than him. And I just had to watch him come up in the ranks of basketball. And it was just a phenomenal talent. Lamar is one of the most unselfish players you ever see. From a guy with that ability, you would think you would encourage him sometimes to go out there and get 25, 30 points, but that's just not who he is. You know, even as a kid, man, he's always a giving and caring young man. And even in the game, that's why you see his line across the board is always like 17, 18 points, 7, 8 rebounds, 6, 7 assists. 2 or 3 steals, a few blocks. Like he always played the game that way. So unselfish. And at the height that he was 6'9", 6'10", to be able to handle that ball the way he does and see the floor and, you know, play the game the way he played it. He was just a joy and thrill to play with and to play to be around as well. For us, though, when we played with the Heat, it was tough because I was in a contract year. I was on a 1-year deal. He just signed along, I think a 7-year deal with us at the time. And we're both from the same neighborhood. I'm trying to hang out with him. He wants me to hang with him, but I'm like, well, I don't know. You know, I could do it today. And then, you know, so we couldn't hang out like we wanted to that year. And you know, because I was trying to make sure, you know, I, you know, do it all I can to get a long-term deal. So we both understood what was at stake.
Shout out to Lamar Odom. I mean, a few colder than him. Thinking back on the point guard matchups at that time, like early mid 2000s, who were the guys that gave you the most trouble?
Guys that were bigger, stronger, athletic. So you guys like Baron Davis, Chauncey Billups, those kind of guards. The other guards that give you trouble too, it goes without saying, a person like Allen Iverson, because he's just relentless. He's going to score. Mm-hmm. They're looking for him every time down. You don't have a second off out there when you guys like him. The other type of players that give you a little problems is the guys that receive pick after pick after pick. Steve Nash, Stockton's, Chris Paul's, because it's just nonstop You're getting hit from one side, this side, this side, and it's repick every time down. But that's the beauty of the league, is that you got so much film and so much tape on these guys that you'll figure out from game to game what to take away, what to live with. Because these guys are pros, NBA, some of them Hall of Famers, some of them perennial All-Stars. So, you know, they're going to have nights. You could contain them one night, but you got to play them again and they could go off the next night. So, you know, like I said, for me, the players that were athletic, big, strong, could roll me down the post because I wasn't as like the big, strong, 6'2", kind of thin. You know, those players pose a big threat to me.
Baron Davis is honestly a guy that comes up pretty much every time I talk to mid-2000s guards as one of the toughest matchups. And you see him in first round against the Hornets. Series goes 7. No team scores over 100 points the entire series, which is just, you know, it's kind of it goes to show you what the league was like back then. But what do you remember from that first round playoff series?
It was grueling. You know, we're playing against a team that they had so many veterans that been in this position before. Yep. Even though we were the 4th seed, I think people picked them to win because, I mean, they had Augman, Lynch,
McGlure, Wesley.
And they had guys that, you know, I remember I was in, we beat them when I was in Milwaukee. Yeah. I think we beat them in the semifinals, and that went 7. And these guys were phenomenal. One of the best things for us that series, Baron Davis' body was hurting. So it was some games he couldn't go off like he wanted to because his body wouldn't allow. So, and we were just young at the time too. And to have two young stars like Odom and Wade, you know, that was tough for those guys because these guys were young, hungry, athletic. And you're asking some of the guys that had so much wear and tear on their body to keep up with a guy like Wade and Odom. And then when I came off the bench, I said, I mean, we got the tempo to go up and down. And for that stretch, I didn't think those guys were going to keep up. None of us, we didn't think they'd keep up with us when we got the game to go up and down. But it was a grueling series, to say the least.
So you win that in 7, a grueling series, and then your reward is going up against the Pacers, who, you know, physicality, they got the defensive player of the year on our test. They got an MVP candidate in Jermaine O'Neal. Series is tied 2-2. They end up winning in 6. Wade plays out of his mind. I think a real coming out party for him. How is that series against Indiana? You're tied 2-2. Do you think you're gonna take it or how's the feeling there?
Yeah, we felt good. We felt good. I mean, we knew both teams kind of played the same similar style defense. So I mean, we were both tough in the pick and roll defense. We both were gonna try to limit direct post ups. And then, you know, it's gonna come down to who's gonna make tough shots and who can get out on a break and get some easy buckets. But we felt good the whole way. I mean, they went up 2-0. We came back to Miami, won our 2 games. And you know, for some reason, that 6th game at home, we kind of ran out of the gas. And that's another thing. You get a chance to understand how hard it is to win coming from one grueling series with the Hornets, and now you're going right in against a team that poses another threat. I mean, those guys were phenomenal that year. I mean, Jermaine O'Neal, Ron Artest, Tinsley was great that series. They got contributions from a lot of guys. Bender had some moments. The list goes on with those guys. So it was tough. And then for Lamar and myself, we had some New York guys on their team with yeah. Tinsley and Artest that who we just wanted to beat, you know, so we could have bragging rights in the summer when we see each other in New York. But it was a tough series. I mean, that was another series that I think 100 was scored maybe once. I'm not sure.
Once.
Yeah. So it that series was going to be crazy too. The electricity in both arenas was amazing as well.
Did you think they were the best team in the East that year, or was it Detroit? You think?
I would have said them. I thought Detroit beat them because they had way more. They had more experience. When you put Wallace, Billups, Hamilton, I thought they were a little more experienced and a little tougher. I think mentally. But if I look back, I think throughout the season, I think Indiana showed that they were the number one team in the East. If I'm not mistaken, they had the number one seed that year. So the whole season, you know, I think everybody in the East felt that they were, but they, it came down to the experience and the mental toughness.
Yeah, I think Indiana, like you said, mental toughness. I think the next year is the year where they're supposed to have that experience. They had Steven Jackson. They had a few pieces, and they're supposed to then kind of dethrone the Pistons, but everybody knows what happens that season to prevent them.
And again, that's mental toughness. So to have what happened in the Palace, but you know, like I said, if you are mentally into everything, you understand that, you know, situation that could have been walked away from, but now look what it does to you going forward. You know, and that's something, a lot of you got to miss a lot of games, and now you go to playoffs again, and you're probably not at full strength when you need to be at full strength against a team that is as good as the Pistons are. And I think the Pistons went right back to the finals that year, right? I think they went back to back years.
Yeah, 04 and 05, they go back to back.
Absolutely.
Now, people don't realize it. I mean, a lot of playoff is, you said, mental toughness. I think luck is
not everything. Everything got to go your way. You got to be healthy. So you get the ball, got to get all the breaks have to go your way to win, and your star players have to be aligned. And then when you got star players that's missing a lot of action due to suspension or whatever, it's tough to go beat a team that has two and maybe three star players. With tough role players. But people forget that Pistons team, and they come off the bench with some tough, gritty, grind out players.
I mean, yeah, Corliss Williamson, Lindsey Hunter, Darvin Ham.
Well, so
they were
guys that are just tough, hungry, and can defend.
Mm-hmm. So wrapping up this season, you guys losing six, you do ultimately get the long-term deal that you were sort of seeking, allowing you to have a little bit of security, not always be thinking about the next move.
Right.
As you kind of just reflect on that time in your life, 03, 04, that Heat season, you know, what are the feelings and just, you know, things that come to mind when you look back, you know, almost 20 years later?
Oh, man, it was a season that propelled me. It's a season that I would say let a lot of people, whether it be coaches, scouts, and players, know that I belong in this league. I could play in this league with the best of them. I think the very next year I go and have a nice year, even though I had a few situations up there in Toronto. I end up at 14.6 assists. So I even took that season from Miami and even had a better season statistically in Miami. And then, you know, everywhere I went, you know, I was a starter. I was a core guy. I was a guy that was helping teams win, get to the playoffs, have good regular season success. I remember back-to-back years in Houston, we were a 50-plus win team. I think one year we won 55 or 55 or 57, something like that. I go to Orlando and I'm on the team that wins like 57 games, and we go all the way to the finals. So, and I was a starter. I was a key component to these teams and their runs, you know. So I think that year helped me in that aspect, as far as being a guy that could help your team win. So it was great. It was great. That year was the year that did it.
No, that's awesome. Now just looking at, I think those Houston teams, if you guys just have McGrady and Yao healthy at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, and then there was a time we did, and we let one get away, game seven on our floor. I think it's 2007.
Yeah, 07.
So we let that game seven. All we had to do was put that away. And I think once we got to the second round, I think we just posed such a tough matchup for Golden State, because it'd be tough for them to guard Yao, it'd be tough for them to put on McGrady. And they were going to double a lot. And then Shane, myself, a couple of us, we were really hitting the three ball. But again, the breaks, you got to catch to get the breaks. We didn't get the breaks. Then the following year, a lot of us were hurt. Yeah, I was hurt. I ended up getting hurt at, we're down 3-2, and I ended up getting hurt in Utah. I tore the ligaments in my ankle. So, Yeah, it's tough, man. But one thing, man, a lot of times, even during the regular season when I was there, Houston playing, one of those guys would always have some type of ailment. And, you know, it's tough for us to regroup.
Yeah, I just talked to Battier about 09, the season you got traded. Yeah. But I always loved those Houston teams. And Shane was
you know, that was, you know, so crazy. I was playing in Orlando, but, you know, whenever I got a chance, the days that we weren't playing, they were playing, I would always watch the game. And I was such amazed at the job they were doing and winning and winning. They got to the West Finals, I think, that year.
Yeah, yeah. They lost to the Lakers in round two. So
seven. Round two, yeah, and seven.
Without Mac.
Yeah. Yeah. They were having a phenomenal run. That was big time for those guys.
Yeah. So just finishing off a few quick hitting questions, kind of going back to the point guards theme. I'm wondering, okay, you're rolling up to Dykeman or Rucker, and you can bring you plus four to the blacktop based off of players that you played with in your NBA career. Who are you bringing?
Definitely bring McGrady. I'll bring Vince Carter. I'll bring Dwayne Wade. Oof. And I'll bring my teammate Lamar.
That's tough.
Yeah. There's some other guys I bring out there too.
Yeah, who's coming off the bench?
I play with Ray Allen. Definitely bring Ray out there. Trying to think of some more guys that I play with that'll be good out there. You know what would be good out there and would surprise some people out there? Hedo Turkoglu.
Ooh, Turk.
I think Turk will surprise some people out there. And he'll have a name, a nickname, you know. but, you know, there's so many guys I play with that could go out there do what they need to do.
Yeah, I mean, we just saw LeBron play in the Drew League, but it'd be cool. I know, like, Kobe and KD have played at Rucker in the past, but it'd be cool to get some of those guys out here out east on the blacktop.
Absolutely.
Any point guards right now that you're watching that you really like watching?
NBA-wise?
Yeah, NBA.
I love watching them all. I mean, Lillard, Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. Love watching Ja Morant. But these guys are phenomenal, man. They're just relentless in their attack and their ability, and the athleticism, their ability to score the way they do on a night in, night out basis, man. It keeps it makes you want to watch every night. You know, so those guards, to say the least, man, I just definitely watch those guards every time they come on if I can catch them. Mm.
You think we're ever going to get anything like the N1 mixtape tour back?
I would say yes, because things have a way of coming back around. The thing is, now would be the time, I would say, if it's to happen, because of the way a lot of these guys are playing, the Lillards and Durant, a lot of these guys are playing. You would think now is the time, because there's so much, I would say, freelance, you know, the way these guys are allowed to show their skill, their passion, their flair for the game, you would think now would be the time. So that's the only scary part is when, but I think so.
I would love to see the N1 brand, like, come back to its roots, because, I mean, I'm 24, so growing up, like, you know, I wore N1 everything. Like, it was the shit, but for some reasons, you know, something slipped, but I would embrace it, and I'm sure everybody else would too. You know, N1 is what a lot of people grew up on watching and wearing.
Right, right, right. I love to see. I mean, we still do some things with N1 here and there, but it's always great to catch up with those guys that did the tour with, all those guys, man. It's just, that's a whole another story in itself, man. Just that run we had, just doing those tours every summer was remarkable. Mm.
Well, Rafer, man, I really appreciate your time. Again, July 29th, Point Gods, streaming only on Showtime. New York City point guards, essential to the history of basketball. So I really appreciate your time. Looking forward to seeing the doc. And again, just thank you, man.
All right, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. Rafer Alston on the 2003-04 Heat. Reminder to check out the Point Gods documentary coming out this Friday on Showtime. Be back next week with a fresh episode. This is your host, Dylan Dreyfus, signing off. Catch you guys next week.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.